I'm just the guy who drew the thing. You guys are actually making the magic. You guys are the guys who are building it.
This is The Art of Construction with your host, Devin Tilley, and co-host, Kevin Keefe. Devin has built a multi-seven-figure business in the construction industry, selling windows, doors, and hardware over the past 13 years. Devin's passion for helping those around him led him to create the Art of Construction informational platform, a part of which is a fireside chat podcast with industry professionals all focused on how they apply art in their business and construction projects. Grown to an audience of over 100,000, Devin shares his strategies for what he has accomplished and creates insightful conversations with industry leaders. This is The Art of Construction, featuring your host, Devin Tilley, and co-host, Kevin Keefe.
Oh man, Kevin, the shows when we get to really talk the true art of construction is one like this, where we're going to talk about a case study, hear the story of someone that's been through the ups and downs of architecture, done his own project. As far as I know, I haven't met many people that have done as much in the art of construction as Matt McMullen.
Yeah, Matt is a really interesting guy. We already have spent time with him off air, but this is really, I'm really excited about this, to hear specifically about the Whiskey Watchtower House, some of the components that went into that, that he helped design, and the interaction with Brett, his trusted advisor within Mountain View, to make this project a real success, and really just to kind of hear his breadth of background and his philosophy about doing business. I mean, I'm really excited to hear about that, because he's really, really dynamic guy.
I've heard a lot of cool stories. Let's see what he comes up with when we step into Studio AOC. Matt, here we go.
Here we go.
All right, Billy, we got Matt McMullen, one of our good buddies that's been on the flyback, architect, and we'll get you all his information about the owner of Create. So you ready, Matt?
I am ready.
All right, so here we go. What's your favorite beverage?
Single malt scotch.
Oh, nice. Tell us one that comes to mind.
Balvenie. I think it's like one of my favorites. You know, the way I got into drinking single malt scotch was during grad school. master's thesis on my jury was this famous architect, Charles Moore. And Charles won the AIA Gold Medal, Pritzker Prize. And after the jury was over, we went to a little place called Soapy Smith's, which is no longer in Denver, liquor license number 2. And they're now out of business. And so I was going to just order a beer. And he's like, "Do you drink single malt scotch?" And I'm like, "No. Never had it." He's like, "If you're going to be a great architect, you got to drink single malt scotch." So that was the beginning of the end.
Great story. We Kevin and I just did a whiskey tasting at a local place here called Laws, A.D. Laws Whiskey, and we're going to do a whiskey and barbecue event. But it was fascinating, the whole bourbon and, you know, the scotch and all the stories behind that stuff. I'm much better at drinking it than knowing a lot about it. But it's been fun to peel back the layers to learn about the different beverages.
Yeah, no, it is good stuff.
Yeah. Tell us about the favorite place you've traveled.
London and then Nigeria. And so, yeah, I was telling Kevin a little bit about this story. It ended up being referred by a client in Los Angeles to a guy whose dad is head of the Benin tribe. So I went to Lagos, Nigeria, and that was like completely outside my comfort zone, because you couldn't fly directly to Lagos, Nigeria at the time. So,
and you designed a project there?
Yeah, it was a project that this guy had run for governor of the state within Nigeria. And went over, spent 2 weeks there. There was a military coup that happened when I was there. So I don't know if you've ever seen Year of Living Dangerously, Mel Gibson, Sigourney Weaver. It was just like that. I barely made it out. So didn't end up doing the project there, but it was like one of the most fascinating 2 weeks I've ever spent in my life. So
give us one story from that, like one specific thing.
It would probably be running for the airplane, because what happened was I was in Benin City and I had to get back to Lagos, and they had come to his father's compound, the chief, and closed it down. So there were these guys called the Nigerian Mopole, which is their motorized police that provide protection for his dad and him. And so they took me to the tarmac. They weren't going to let me leave. Finally, the guy I was with, who was a sergeant in the Nigerian Mopole, said, "Just take your bag and make a run for it." So I'm running across the tarmac.
And dodge the bullet.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, okay, this is how it all ends. I get shot in the back running across the tarmac. But got on the plane, ended up getting out of, I was the last guy on the British Airways flight getting out of there.
Wow. I think we're going to have some stories.
So it was interesting.
Well, tell us your favorite hobby or interest outside of the construction arena.
Probably be golf. Yeah, I love to play golf.
Cool.
Yeah, it's a tough game, but a great game. And it's like, Frank Lloyd Wright, which, we just saw Taliesin when we went back. Frank Lloyd Wright had a quote or a comment where he said he could live to be, over 100 years old and never know everything there is to know about architecture. And golf is the same way. You could play golf for 100 years and not learn everything that you need to know about that game. So I find it a challenge.
What's your favorite course you've played?
Oh, gosh. Probably a place called the Wilderness Club up in Montana. It's a Nick Faldo design course. It's ranked like top 50 in the United States and top course in Montana. It's in Eureka, Montana, about 30 minutes south of the Canadian border, and just absolutely gorgeous. So I went up there last year.
Awesome. Well, we got to know a little bit about my friend who we've taken fun trips to Anderson together, and we can talk about that. And a colleague that's designed some amazing projects for us day to day. So I said, Matt, you got to come into Studio AOC and tell us your story. And you have a few years of practicing art and architecture that I know you've been a fan of us and listened to the show. So tell us your story of how you've lived the art side of architecture for a few years and what you've done up until today. And then we'll go from there.
I graduated from CU Denver, won the AIA gold
medal. Go Buffs.
Yeah, go Buffs. We've got a big one coming up against Washington here on Saturday. Graduated with the AIA gold medal, and like I said, Charles Moore was on my master's thesis jury. And so, he said, hey, what do you want to do? And I said, I just kind of want to get out of Denver. Grown up here. Went to school here, really want to see some other things. So he said, where would you like to go, East Coast or West Coast? Because at that time, he had about three or four firms around the nation, one in Texas, one in Santa Monica. He was in Connecticut. And I said, I'm really more of a West Coast guy. So I packed up everything I owned, jumped in a Mazda GLC, and drove out to Santa Monica, interviewed with his firm out there, Moore, Rubel, Udell, which is a great firm, and ended up not taking the job. But moved to L.A. and worked for some very interesting folks out there. So we were, that was in the mid to late 80s. And so a lot of funky architecture going on. So I worked for a guy by the name of Frederick Fisher, who we did projects in Japan and a lot of art galleries, PS1 in New York, L.A. Louvre Gallery, the Eli Broad Museum of Contemporary Art. But Fred was a contemporary of Frank Gehry, Morphosis, Eric Owen Moss. So I had buddies who worked at all those firms and really got introduced to sort of architecture as art and architecture as sculpture. And something that we'll discuss later, really appreciating detailing and how materials and things like that come together. So I did that till about 92. Riots happened. Was actually going to go downtown that day. Would have been driving right through the intersection where Reginald Denny incident happened. A friend called me, told me don't go downtown. And so after that, I grew a little disenchanted with LA. And so decided it was time to move back to Colorado and move back to Boulder. But continued to practice in Los Angeles. California was the first place that I got licensed. And have continued to practice there over time, mainly entertainment clients, doing work for entertainment folks.
So you worked for others, really learning the art of architecture, and then you went into starting your own firm when you moved back to Colorado, right?
Yeah, I started my own firm out there.
Okay.
And so like most young architects and designers, you end up doing a little bit of moonlighting. You always get permission from your principal that it's okay to do that. And so my very first project was for a guy by the name of Claude Akins. And so Claude was in From Here to Eternity. He was General Aldo in Planet of the Apes and was the AAA AMCO guy. and so did a little remodel for him. And it's really interesting, the entertainment industry in Los Angeles. You know, there was a book written, you'll never have lunch in this town again. And it's very true in the sense that you really have to take care of these folks because it's a very tight-knit community. And so one thing led to another where he referred me to another gentleman, a guy, Michael Kahn, who's Steven Spielberg's film editor, did a project for him. He referred me to the Star Trek producers, so I did all three of their homes, and it just sort of went on and on from there. And so I got licensed in 89, started my own firm in 89, and then over the years as I moved back to Boulder in 92, grew my firm to be about 15 people. And we did work California, Colorado, Texas, Nigeria, Hawaii, you know, kind of all over the place.
Wow. Cool. And then the market changes, right?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, right? So when you're a young guy and you're a designer, right, I don't think at that point you really discover the difference between fame and fortune. And so it's all about getting published, winning awards, being on TV shows, being in mags. And so, you know, I checked all those boxes. But at 15 people, when you're doing that kind of work, you start to get away from what you really love. And I know that as an entrepreneur, you'll appreciate this, right? You get into starting your own business for a specific reason. And you have to stay true to that. And what happens is once you start, I call it feeding the monster. You start feeding the monster, and now all of a sudden you get away from what you really enjoy doing, which for me was designing and creating spaces that people love. And I would joke with people, they're like, well, what do you do? I said, you know, I'm a firefighter. And they're like, what do you mean? I said, well, you know, I walk around all day long, and I put out brush fires on projects. And then at night, if I'm lucky, then I'll get a chance to design again or do things like that. And so luckily, you know, the recession took care of some of that. And so I really had to sort of reposition myself and reposition my career when the construction industry and architecture industry really took a major hit.
Yeah. So you refocused, and then now, and today, tell us what you're doing today. Employees, tell us about that. Who's where you're at?
Yeah. So what I did when the recession happened, I had gone back and got a master's in real estate and construction management at DU. And the thing that was interesting to me was most of my colleagues were good designers, really good architects, but they didn't understand the financial side. Not only of construction, but they didn't understand the financial side of development. And that was an interest of mine. And I said, you know, I create these spaces, either homes that make a lot of money for people if they ever decide to sell them, or they're able to pull equity out to do other things, or I would do businesses. And so, you know, I'd do retail, things like that. And all of a sudden, people would experience their best years ever. And I thought to myself, you know what? Why am I creating all this value for people? I should create that for myself. And so I ended up, you know, going back, writing all my own performas and doing some small development. And at the time of the recession, I actually had a couple large projects under contract to redevelop a large shopping center in Boulder to a power broker center, like a power retail center. And then also had the Boulder Transit Center surroundings under contract. And like I said, the recession kind of took care of that, where my investors at that point backed out. But then I went to work at UCAR and NCAR, the National Center for Atmospheric Research. And that was really interesting because then I got to use my construction management and business side. So managed 60 people, $17 million budget, a million square foot real estate portfolio, five campuses, six buildings, a solar observatory in Hawaii on Mauna Loa. And so it was interesting. I took that sort of break from architecture and really focused on that business side and understanding as truly the owner. We did a lot of projects where did two buildings that were LEED Platinum buildings in Boulder for $185 a square foot. Once again, thanks to the recession, people were hungry. But it really, I think, made me a better architect because I was able to look at what it was like to sit in the owner's seat. And, you know, as an architect, I always kind of had this feeling as if I didn't hear from the client, that was a great project because that meant that I did everything well and I didn't hear any complaints. Well, as the owner, I would hear it every day from all of my folks on my campuses, you know, of certain ways I had potentially disappointed him by making certain decisions as owner rep during that process. And so now I'm back in business just for myself, you know, so it's just me. And I think the thing that I've learned is, you know, it's kind of like Toyota with the, you know, lean thinking and Muda. I've removed all the Muda from my process, and now it's just me. And I form these sort of like, I call them like tactical strike teams, where I go out and I find experts in each field that I need, whether that be three-dimensional modeling, structural engineer, a trusted advisor at a window supplier, right? In order to create beautiful architecture that really serves the owner.
That might be worth repeating, that trusted advisor part there. So.
Well, it was a little bit more lead-in than we normally do, but I think it was worth taking the time because I have just been so inspired by listening to Matt's stories and where he's been. And we always talk about on The Art of Construction, two things we don't have enough of, time and money. So my whole thing is about to learn from others and how I can best engage and help. And how do you do that? Spending time together and having fun. So the next thing I want to talk about is how this is the cliff notes of just the icing on the cake of this guy's amazing story is, tell us your experience of taking the trip back to Anderson with us. And when you can roll it off the top of your tongue, getting a trusted advisor that took some time to learn and understand that. Maybe toot our horn a bit of what we've done day to day, because it's not just about theory on the art of learning the theory. The construction part of it can be a lot of different things as far as how we put all that together and developed that relationship. And then I want to talk about a case study about an awesome job that we did in Winter Park. So the floor is yours, my friend.
Yeah, so you know, when you're looking at putting a project together, it's really all about sort of risk management. And it's not only risk management for you and your license and your E&O insurance, it's also risk management for the owner. Because what you're looking for is repeat business, you know? I mean, I was on Fine Living Channel, which was the precursor to HGTV, you know, won multiple national awards, been in magazines. And candidly, out of all those things, really didn't get any work out of that, right? Which as a young guy, you're like, what? You know, I thought I get published and then people flock to my door. Just doesn't work that way. So really where your business comes from is really nurturing your client relationship. And so with this project that we're going to talk about here in a little bit, I was fortunate enough through the contractor to come across your guys' business. And you know, windows, doors are a huge thing because they relate to moisture prevention, right? Moisture intrusion prevention. And so the type of architecture that I do, I mean, all these phrases have been used now, you know, leading edge, cutting edge, contemporary. I mean, back in the 80s and 90s, man, we had to fight that battle because people really didn't know what it was. Now people see it. They realize that their house doesn't have to look like everyone else's, and it can really become a reflection of how they live, what the site looks like, what the site forces call for, the site conditions. And so finding Mountain View Window and Door was an incredibly relieving experience in the sense that California, it's very easy to blur the distinction between inside and outside because the climate is very temperate. Colorado, and specifically Winter Park, where the elevation is up around 10,000 feet, and we're facing the back range and Vasquez, which is sort of the back end to Winter Park ski area, you get brutal winds, and it'll be sub-zero days up there for days in a row. How do you blur that distinction so that you really have that inside-outside thing going on, and how do you create a window and door package that minimizes the fenestration so that people can appreciate the view without freezing their tails off?
And so I think we did a bit of that on this project. So what's the name of this? And something about a whiskey watchtower with whiskey barrel floors and some pretty cool views, right?
Yeah, so... yeah, Rich is a really interesting guy. He's with Charter Communications and just a great client. I've been fortunate over the years to have some clients like that. Rich and Maggie had two kids. Now they have a third child. And Rich really saw this place as sort of a legacy. And it was going to be in the family for a long time. And he sees it as a gathering place for future generations, where his kids will bring their kids back. And he goes from the young father to the wizened old grandfather, you know, in this place. And so when I talk to clients, I try to get them to identify with some experience like in their past or something that's really important to them. And so there was a space which kind of rises up above the house composition, and it's like kind of a Forest Service lookout tower, you know, in a sense. And we started to talk about this space, and I said, you know, Rich, what, you know, you got a pretty stressful job. What relaxes you? You know, as we talked earlier, funny enough, he likes to drink whiskey as well too. You know, more bourbon. And so I said, man, how about if we create this space up top that's completely open, and you go up there and you just listen to music, you know, you can kind of get away from the kids a little bit and just de-stress and watch the sunset and just drink some really fine whiskey. And so then I made a joke. I said, you know, it'd be kind of like Jimi Hendrix, you know, all along the whiskey watchtower. And so that's kind of how it got its name. We now call it the Whiskey Watchtower.
That is just awesome.
So just stop and pause and list the story that he just said. Are you sold? You're not being salesy. You just find out what's important to them. And people are always asking the question is, how do you know how to put the design together? Isn't the art or the inspiration come from what they like and understanding your customer? That's where I've been learning this over the years. It's like, man, these flybacks, it's like we thought about, we can all learn about Anderson Windows. But what we really learn about that is how to be a trusted advisor and what's important to our customers. And so how did the process go to sit down and develop the Whiskey Watchtower that is the pinnacle of this project? How did that come together to have that conversation?
Well, you know, I'd mentioned earlier Charles Moore. I mean, that was kind of his process, as he was a very community-oriented guy, listening to the public and to his clients very closely. And it's about active listening, you know. And, you know, for my design process, there's two things that feed into it. And you're incredibly quiet in both of them. And, you know, I'm from Boulder, so you have to be kind of careful how you say this. But you absolutely need to be quiet in sort of two situations. One is when you're first at the site. If you're quiet enough at the site will tell you what wants to be there, right? It'll speak to you. Like, you'll notice where the sun rises and the sun sets. You'll notice where winds are coming from. You might be lucky enough to see some wildlife wander onto the site. And the next time is actively challenging and listening. So you actively challenge with the answer or with a question, and then you actively listen to the answer. And so you really got to develop this trust with your client that they know you're there all about them and trying to make this space fit them like a glove and inspire them, whether that's their business or their home. And so I tried to create that relationship with Rich and Maggie to be able to ask them these really sort of insightful questions and deep, meaningful questions to them about, like, you know, how they grew up and, you know, when you were little, what did you think about? And it's that sort of thing that as a trusted advisor to your client, people are not, I mean, they're looking for great service, but they're looking to be inspired. They're looking to be titillated. They're looking to be excited about what they're going to spend all this money on. And so it's really, the onus is on you to be sort of this like open vessel that challenges but also takes it all in and then synthesizes it and gives them more than they thought that they could have.
You know, one thing you that hits me or makes me think about is, based on what you're saying, is that kind of emotive experience or thought process that a lot of times, unless you're kind of pushed in that direction, you don't think about. So talk a little bit about the reaction you get with your customers, because initially that may not be something that they're thinking about, but really, when we all collectively sit back and look at a project, you walk into, like, the museum you described, the Broad Museum in Los Angeles. You walk into buildings like that, it creates emotion for everybody, whether you're focused on it or not. So talk about how you work with a client to pull that emotional content out to get them ultimately a design that they're really going to be comfortable with, and like you say, inspire them and get them excited.
Yeah, so I took these trainings in Los Angeles called LifeSpring. And so LifeSpring's kind of like Esther for them. And it's great training because it's you really get a chance to be with people in a certain way that it's about experiential learning and didactic learning. But one of the processes that they teach in LifeSpring is first you have to create trust and truly care. And then out of that, then you can then ask for permission from people to be that way with them. Because, yeah, if all of a sudden I just walked into a meeting and you're interviewing me and I'm like, hey, so tell me about, you know, your deepest aspirations, people would be like, who is this guy?
Exactly. You know?
Where are you from? Are you from the CIA? I mean,
well, that's why I wanted to bring it up, because we know you. So hearing it, we're kind of right there with you. But the first time that you're talking with somebody that doesn't know you real well, and maybe even somebody that's been referred, that's really important to get that trust. And so that's the kind of thing we were looking for, is to see how you open that door.
Yeah, it's just it's a passion, not a business. You know, I mean, it's what I see with you guys at Mountain Window and Door, is that it's really, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's business. You got to make money at the end of the day, but it's really, it's a passion. You can't be afraid to care about your clients and get emotionally invested in them. And so that's how I do that. You know, I mean, right when I meet somebody, I call them by their first name and just get to know them and ask questions about their family and share about my family. And all of a sudden, there's this sort of connection. Now, having said that, if I can't create that connection, I've referred people on to other people, because they're not everybody wants that. And so you can't be afraid to say, hey, you know what? I don't think I'm the right architect for you, but I can refer you to some of my colleagues, and you guys might connect.
Well said.
That's gold. I mean, that is such, you know when to say no and when to say yes, is, and you have so much more fun that way. And I can see that in you. You're passionate about this project we're talking about. And to make the passion come to life, you don't have enough time or money to make all the mistakes yourself. So you have to surround yourself around good people that you know, like, and trust. And how do you get there? You know, that's the part that I read this in every book, and it says it all these different ways and all these different things. The reality is just connections and working on those connections and working those devils in the details behind the scenes. So Brett is the trusted advisor at Mountain View Window & Door that you worked with on this project. And, you know, Brett, a couple of times on this story that is, I'm going to go totally window geek on you guys here, because this part just is so cool, because Matt's working on these drawings and Brett, you know, we've been at this for a long time, and he comes running into my office. He's like, Devin, you got to see these details. I've never seen corner meat details like this. And I'm like, all right, buddy, I love it. You know, I'm the expressive, and I'm more the excited front end, and he's in the analytical and the details, back to under, you know, working together. But those were so cool. And tell us the story about working with a trusted advisor. Not, you know, the art is getting the art of what your homeowners wanted to see, but the construction part is working to define that as you've lived that, you know, real world experience. You got to get those devils in the details right on paper if you want it to not freeze up on a corner meet door system, right?
Yeah. Well, and that's, you know, I don't want to go too far here, but yeah, Brett is like a window detailing god with a little g. Just a little G. But yeah, I mean, he really literally is the best person. And I've been fortunate enough to work with some good people, but he's the best person I've ever worked with. And I remember when I first started doing construction documents, did this detailing on a multifamily in Santa Monica. And I remember the framer was this old crusty guy, and he's like, you know what? Here's what I hate about architects, and especially young ones, you know, is you guys draw cartoons, and we can't build from cartoons, you know? And so I took that as a personal challenge to really educate myself over the years, get in the field, watch how guys are doing it, ask the framers, ask the steel erectors. You know, I mean, hey, I drew this, but is there a better way you can think of to do it? And so, yeah, I was able to on this particular house, get things to a certain level of how I thought Rich and Maggie wanted it, and also how I wanted it to finish cleanly. But then, you know, there's always gaps, like, okay, well, how do I take that Anderson window system and how do I take that Fleetwood door system, marry these two things, have steel be exposed on the inside and outside, still thermally break it, and have it finished clean and have it buildable so that it's not, you know, $1 million to do this detail. And that's where Brett really came in, where I would say, okay, you got these attachment detailing, you've got this, you've got that. How do I blend these things together? So I would take it, you know, like 90% of the way there, 95%. And then, man, he would come in and say, okay, yeah, well, this can clip into that and that can clip into that. And here's how you might finish that off. And it's like, man, I want to work out every project with this guy, you know, so.
Well, and that's a really important detail, because on our side of the fence, one of the most frustrating things we can bump into is not having that deal. Kind of like you described about your experience and learning from framers and steel erectors and so forth. And that is, you know, with all the great designs that we see out there, having somebody in your shoes that can work with us to get the finished detail, you know, to the end user is really critical. And we can provide a lot of that help, just like you described Brett did. But if we don't have enough detail up front, then we're guessing a little bit too much. And sometimes it works, sometimes it may not work so well, but when we can have that cooperation and that extra detail on the end of the architect and designer, it can make a critical difference in the overall project. So we appreciate that.
Well, and I think, you know, going back to the respect part again, you obviously, you know, you have your respect and care for your client, but you also have to have respect and care for the trades and the subs that are on that job. And, you know, I've heard this multiple times where people are like, hey, Matt, you're like one of the only architects that talks to us on the job site. Apparently, some folks will come in and you know, not talk to the subs at all, and they're just talking to the, you know, the GC or the project foreman, and here's how I want this. Man, I'm introducing myself to the drywaller, the painter, the finished carpenter, the rough carpenter. You know, and these guys are like, man, you know, I can't believe you're talking to us. I'm like, you know what? I'm just the guy who drew the thing. You guys are actually making the magic. You guys are the guys who are building it. So to me, you know, if there's one thing I would suggest to young architects, is absolutely talk to the trades if you're not building it yourself, because these people are, they care as much as you do. They want to be proud of the project that they've done. And how will you know if you're successful? You always just look at your results that are right in front of you. And if your subs are bringing out their families on weekends when they don't have to be there and walking them through the project and showing them, then you know you're doing something right, because these people have gotten passionate about your project.
Awesome.
So cool. So we always talk about begin with the end in mind, and this is one of those projects that we're getting ready to do the final photos that hopefully we can showcase on the show notes. The execution process of getting those devils in the details right, we're sitting at on a trip together in Anderson. I'm like, so tell me, how did those details, what's the frost like this winter? Because this takes, you know, what's probably been 2 years that from those first designs to now the door has seasoned and living in the house. How'd it work?
You know, really good. We used a gel to thermally break the interior wide flange moment frame, because there's lots of glass on this house, and so we had to have moment frames to resist the wind loads. But then also we used sympathetic channels that were the same size on the outside of the house, so it looked like the wide flange came all the way through. So we thermally broke it with this product called Timco, which is like a gel. But then also too, we're very careful of how we attach the Fleetwood system and the Anderson system to those moment frames to make sure that was thermally broken, not only within the unit, but from the unit to its attachment piece. And so, I mean, the short answer is it worked great. With climate change, you know, it's been getting a little bit warmer up in Grand County, and so we've had a lot of pine beetle epidemic up there on the lodgepole pines. But we did have a 2-week period where it got down to -5, -10 in the town of Winter Park for a 2-week period. And I thought, oh man, you know, well, now we'll see. And Tyler Huber, who was the project foreman, said that when he looked at the detail for where the Fleetwood windows came in, and it's an interlocking style where on one side it's a disappearing system where it goes back into a pocket and the others stack. And so it comes in, and once you open those up, there's no post. He said literally there was just a little bit of frost on the inside of that door and nothing on any of the windows. You know, literally you could touch them and they were warm to the touch. So, what I worked on with Brett and the GC and the engineer and everything, I think the whole team was able to be really successful.
No, that's great to hear. That's what we hope to hear always. Talk a little bit about the accessory metals, and which for those of our listeners that aren't familiar with that, it's the idea of taking and covering up all the structural components between these massive window units, door units, et cetera. So talk a little bit about how the accessory metals...
Wait, you have to have structure? I thought it's just all glass.
Well, and that is one key component, too, quite honestly, that going back to my comment earlier that we do appreciate is having structure in between, because we do oftentimes see plans with these grandiose, you know, window walls, but no structure in there to hold everything up. And the reality, as you described, in a lot of areas, and particularly here on the western slope, you're going to have some serious winds in a lot of locations that you got to contend with. And you don't want those windows performing like an accordion. They're not designed to do that. You know, when they're closed, they're supposed to stay closed. So talk a little bit about that and how the accessory metals help cover up some of those structural components.
Yeah, so, I mean, you actually can do glass. You can do Pilkington structural glazing. I did that on one house where, yeah, you have structural glass fence, but we don't want to talk about the budget on the house. It was a completely different thing. With the Whiskey Watchtower in particular, we were trying to give it this sort of monotone, uniform look, where we really wanted it metal clad all the way around. But we were concerned if we went to an outside sheet metal or brake metal manufacturer that it would look discontinuous, because you'd have one level of bronze anodized, dark bronze anodized on the windows, and then you'd be trying to match that. It wouldn't match perfectly. Maybe they fade differently over time. And so where Brett started was, what's the look that you want? Without trying to do a preconception of, okay, well, right, let's use this system. I said, you know, here's what I want, sort of this monotonal band around here. He said, okay, well, we have this expander metal system that we can use. So I said, well, hey, let me take a look at it. And then we started to talk about, okay, well, what sort of widths can you get in that? And at that time, things were limited. When we were back, I heard now you can go up to 4 feet wide, which would have made it's a 4x10 sheet. You can even go 10 feet wide, right?
Correct.
But at the time, that wasn't the case when we were doing this project. But we talked a lot about that, where those breaks would happen. I mean, the way I was brought up in California working for these designers, you've seen a lot of Frank Gehry's work, and while Gehry's a brilliant architect, some of his detailing in the early years was not the cleanest, where you would see long runs of galvanized sheet metal, the snowflake pattern, and it would have like oil canning and waves in it. And so Brett and I talked about that. I said, I don't want to get these things where I'd look along the planar surface and the light diffracts differently because it has some oil canning in it. And so we talked about where to make those breaks. And like I say, you think about a window supplier. I mean, what sort of window supplier is going to get to that level of detail with you of not only here's where I want my windows, but here's where I'd like the breaks and the metal and those expansion pieces to happen. And everything was intentional. They would line up with certain architectural elements.
Oh, that's awesome.
So we're not just a window peddler day-to-day. We're actually trusted advisors working on an integral system and starting by the design and then finding the right components to where we really are a key element to know what manufacturers to bring into the right project, right?
Yeah, I'm waiting for you guys to start getting into the 401k. advise me in a trusted way about that as well. So.
Well, you have to know your limitations.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah, Clint Eastwood said that, right?
The other thing I wanted you just to highlight for our listening audience that you still practice architecture here in Colorado as well as California, and being licensed in both states. Tell the listening audience on how you manage projects from afar, or managing, you know, going back and forth and utilizing, you know, any tricks of the trade that you found, because you're still managing projects in both, right?
Correct, yeah. So the project in Winter Park just finished, and so actually we're shooting it on Thursday. It'll be in Winter Park magazine, and then we're going to be chatting with Colorado Homes and Lifestyles, Mountain Living, and Dwell to see if they may have interest in publishing it. I've had stuff in those mags in the past. And then also have a project under construction in Hancock Park in Los Angeles, and working on four more projects out there. You know, things have changed a lot, where I listened to 81, show 81, which was, you know, Genie Belt, and just talking about how do you leverage technology to grow your presence and to be more interconnected, actually have a larger footprint than you have personally as one person firm. And I use lots of different things. So I use the CAD software I use is ArchiCAD. It's by Graphisoft. And back in the old days, when we first started doing three-dimensional CAD, and we were one of the first firms in Colorado in 1995 who was doing 3D modeling. And so at that time, you would do these sort of movies where things would be rendered frame by frame, fly-throughs. And so then you take that, you put it on VHS tapes, and then I would jump on a plane, fly out, meet with my clients at Paramount Studios, pop it in their VHS, and we'd watch it. I mean, now it's advanced to the level that I'll build something three-dimensionally. They have this really cool add-on called BIMX, and BIMX is a proprietary thing to ArchiCAD. And what it is you can load it onto your iPhone, your Android. You can load it onto your laptop, iPad, and without me physically having to fly there. In fact, I'm doing a project with a client now. It's a son of a Star Trek producer, and so he's currently shooting some shows in Toronto, and so we're redoing his house up in Hollywood Hills. He has this killer view where he looks across his pool, and you can see the Hollywood sign. I mean, it's like the total bachelor pad. Very cool. But I was able to send him this thing, and he downloaded the BIMX app, and then we jump on the phone late at night, like 11:30 when he gets through with filming for the day doing his shoot, and we'll walk through the model together. And so all of a sudden, physically, I don't have to be in Toronto with him. You know, I don't have to meet up with him in L.A. We can just talk over the phone. I can then also send that to the GC, who's putting the price together. And I can say, hey, man, go through this thing, take a look at it, see if you have any questions. And to me, it's one thing to provide drawings and specs. It's another thing to have somebody physically be able to fly through that space from not only a cost standpoint, but also no surprises on the client's part. They know exactly what they're getting. So, yeah, I mean, that's just an example of one of the apps and technologies that I use.
And it's all about lifestyle. Like, you can live the lifestyle you want to live here in Colorado, but you can still take care of those relationships in Hollywood, and the homeowner can actually digitally walk through the space before it's built, so now everybody's on the same page. I mean, miraculous, right? And Where we're going to go next with artificial intelligence and... You know, it's crazy to sit here and talk about working on the business instead of in the trenches of the business.
And they do have that. They've got this sort of headset that you can put on, and, you know, you can do that if you want to. But I found some people,
they either want to throw up
or they're walking around and all of a sudden they bang into the wall in their house.
So. It's a little too intense. Well, one of the things that we always talk about is how, you know, in this industry, very, very few people on the client side really have the ability to visualize without kind of being hand-fed or force-fed, meaning that they're, you know, you're giving them that 3D modeling versus being able to see three dimensions on a two-dimensional plane. So, you know, it's really, really important. I mean, I don't know if you find this, but we hear it often that, and I know as a builder myself, when we built model homes and things like that, it really wasn't until things were finished that the light bulbs started going off. And back then, we didn't have a lot of these kind of tools. So it really helps get them an idea of what they like, what they don't like, what the experience is going to be, and then it helps you and the GC really fine-tune, you know, everything, as opposed to having sheets and sheets and sheets that later become void because I don't really like that.
Yeah, and I think it takes ego out of the equation, too, because you're dealing with, you know, when you're doing, custom residential homes or, like, film production studios, things like that, restaurants, you're dealing with people who potentially can have pretty big egos. And so they're not going to want to tell you that they can't think three-dimensionally. And so, you know, you'll sort of walk them through it, and they'll be like, oh, yeah, I get it. You know, I can see that. And then you find out later, no, actually, they didn't. And this was prior to, you know, me being able to do the BIMX and also even sometimes the VHS, where they go, oh, okay, that's what you were talking about.
That's after it's built, generally, right?
If you don't use these tools.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So you got to be cutting edge and use these tools.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome.
Well, we could talk all day, and now, and your stories are just miraculous, and it's so cool to see your passion, you know, back and forth, and it's been so fun to work together on a project. We like to leave our listening audience, of all the things and all the things you've done, if there's one thing you want them to hear for contractors and architects to grow their business, you're up on a pedestal, Matt. Tell the Art of Construction, if there's one thing you want to have them hear, the floor is yours.
It's funny. I have an 18-year-old son, and so he's at that point where it's like, Dad doesn't know anything. And so, the thing I try to share with him are a couple things. One, absolutely be passionate about what you do. The second thing is, don't be afraid to care. Even though that passion hopefully is your career and your profession. Don't be afraid to care, even though it's business, right? So really care about your clientele. And then the final thing I share with him, and I think this might even be the most important, is networking. It's not really what you know, even though that's important. It's more sort of who you know. And we always joke about, there's 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. And so I'm actually, 2 degrees from Kevin Bacon, because I know a guy who's a good friend with Kevin Bacon. But it's really about just looking within your existing network and who do you know that may know someone who can make that introduction to you to accomplish something you want to accomplish, whether that's with your business or your own personal life.
Awesome. Well, thanks said. So much, man. Thanks for telling us your story, and can't wait to talk about the next project of what the highlight is, like the Whiskey Watchtower on the last one, right?
Hey, thanks for having me on board here, guys. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Matt. What an honor to sit back and listen to one of your customers, of us living the art of construction outside of the studio, to just sit back and listen from our ideal customer preaching our tune.
Well, and it's really exciting when you have alignment of ideas and thought process. And when I heard Matt describe the importance to him about spending time on the job site, talking to the other trades, the drywaller, the framer, the steel erector, and that kind of thing. I mean, that's kind of how we approach business from the standpoint of really understanding how everything goes together. I mean, we don't just sit back and say, here's this commodity of windows and, knock your socks off. I mean, we get intimately involved, particularly on these kinds of detail-oriented projects, to make sure it works the way, the architect has originally specified, so we can help secure the vision that they've specced into the plans and the concepts for the, for the ultimate user.
If there's one thing I want to tell you, Tribe, take the time to work on your business. And how do you do that? Go have fun with your customers that are like-minded, and you can debrief at a place where we're learning. He's talking about how we learned more about the capabilities of the Anderson E-Series, and talking about how, beginning with the end in mind, about how the frost didn't, the concerns we had by don't expect what you don't inspect. So, hey, that was really honorable for me to sit back and listen to him tell the real world story of what we're working so hard here on the Art of Construction to follow our passion and build the tribe.
And I think a couple other key components is when you've got multiple products involved, how do you tie those together? And that's something that we can provide a lot of help with. And then finally, I think the most important thing is just that whole concept. We all deal with people that, we get frustrated with, we deal with people that it just didn't quite go the right way, or we didn't get that level of cooperation. As Devin described, when you're working with people that execute well, that are fun to be around and fun to work with, it all gives the energy to be able to put up with and deal with those clients and customers that aren't quite so wonderful. So
wherever you're at around the globe, go find your Mountain View window and door, or your Anderson window and door, whatever makes you tick. But man, follow your passion and have fun. Man, we're having fun, and it's cool to hear the stories. Right, Kevin?
Absolutely.